Today's newscast was produced by Catherine Comp and Benoit K. Joes. Our headlines editor was Nell Abram. And the technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Scott Pham. From Bogota, Colombia, I'm Manuel Rueda.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Jim.
Hi.
Red Hack.
Hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Gus.
Yo, I'm really happy for you, and I'm going to let you finish, but Eric S. Raymond has the best radio show ever.
Ooh. Go on. Go on. You obviously have something to say. Go ahead. No, I obviously have an agenda here. Go ahead and finish.
That's all I had to say.
Turn down the music and everything. Come on. That's how much did he pay you for that? All right. We'll discuss this later.
I thought the check said Kanye West on it. I don't know. I could be wrong there.
Okay. And Dot Red.
Hello.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia. You know, I've never heard WESR.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we'll find out about that. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of fraudulent stuff, I'm sorry, as best I could do. What's this I'm hearing, Bernie? I think you forwarded us this story about, it's gotta be something wrong here. There's a former employee of the U.S. Attorney's Office is guilty of identity fraud. Is that these are the people that are supposed to protect you against identity fraud, and actually they're involved in it?
Yeah, apparently the Department of Justice is U.S. Attorney's Office here in Philadelphia. This is it's called the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. They're right here at 6th and Arch Street in Philadelphia. I've had to go through their office many times over the years.
So they could have stolen your identity when you went through there.
Well, they did. Actually, they stole my passport, and I never got it back.
But they also stole your soul for a while.
And they stole my birth certificate, which I never got back, which had two little footprints and my mother's thumbprints on it. It was really... I know. It's like, but they never gave it back to me. You know, obviously, I would, you know, if I use it for anything, I guess they would think I'd be up to
How
no
come
good,
I never got that? I never got footprints and thumbprints and things like that.
That's... Well... You know,
were you a felon as a baby, or
no? I was born in Nebraska, and there's in the hospitals there they still have this really beautifully intaglio engraved birth certificates, with like your newborn baby's footprints and your mother's thumbprints. But the Secret Service confiscated that and my passport along with a whole bunch of other stuff, and I never got any of it back. So that's, I think. I really, really missed.
Well, it sounds like you got off lucky, though, because apparently they could have stolen your identity as well. Shakila Nakia Wallace, 25 years old, of Philadelphia, worked as a clerk in the financial litigation unit, used court records to find personal information of defendants, and then secured online payday loans totaling about $34,435 between January 2005 and March 2008. She pleaded guilty to fraud and aggravated identity theft. And she's free on a $10,000 bond pending sentencing on December 15th. Faces up to 5 years in prison, fines up to $500,000. Interesting.
Well, something tells me she probably won't get as much time as some people do for hacking in cases where there weren't any victims like my own. But I actually had to go through her office. Now, I don't know if she was working there then, because this was many years ago. But her office is the office where someone would go to pay their federal fines or other fees involved with being prosecuted federally. So she was taking IDs and other information belonging to criminal defendants. People who had been found guilty or pled guilty or pled no contest.
It sounds like a couple of things. I mean, first of all, it sounds like it's not, I mean, as far as we know, it's not the higher levels of the people working there. It sounds like she was sort of a low-level, you know, bureaucratic functionary. And then beyond that, if she was doing this to get a payday loan, were they paying her enough? I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, they're probably not paying anybody enough.
You know, you would think that someone anywhere even near, remotely close to law enforcement would have the common sense to not try to do something like
this. All right, a couple of things wrong with that statement. You said common sense and law enforcement in the same breath. I can't understand that. And authority, having the authority and not abusing it, that's not the American way.
Well, being that this is such a big thing and people are, you know, getting arrested for this all the time, you'd think they would see this kind of...
She didn't think she'd get caught, I'll bet.
She probably watched the movie. It was at Office Space or something.
Hackers?
Just thought she could do the same
movie
thing.
Yeah, maybe. You know, Hackers was on the other night. It was fun to watch. Yeah, I saw it on some crazy digital cable channel and brought back such memories.
Ironically, she'll probably have to go back to that office to pay her fines.
I know, and the cutting remarks that her ex fellow employees will make to her.
Yeah.
It makes me sad to think about that.
It's Hackers' anniversary. The movie.
Is it?
Oh really?
Yeah. Wait, how do you know that?
I know a lot of things.
What is the anniversary?
I don't know that.
But you just know the anniversary is coming up.
Yes.
Well, it came out in the autumn, so okay, that wasn't
too much. Well, you know, I learned things from the Twitter, but they're not specific.
Okay. Well, speaking of the Twitter, this is...
Follow them on Twitter?
Of course, the Twitter is in the news yet again. And this time it involves President Obama. He was off the record. This is kind of weird.
Yeah.
He was speaking on CNBC, but he wasn't speaking on CNBC. Yeah. He was in the studio, and he called Kanye West a jackass. Because of, you know, the antics that he was involved in over at the VMA Awards on Sunday. He interrupted Taylor Swift, the country music singer that none of us ever heard of before, and now she's a big star and everyone is going to love her forever, and he probably did her the best favor ever. President Obama called him a jackass, but he did it off record. In fact, he made sure that CNBC understood that when he was talking, it was off the record, and they agreed. However, what they weren't counting on was the fact that ABC News employees, ABC News, not NBC, ABC News employees, including the co-anchor of Nightline, Terry Moran, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, he tweeted this fact that President Obama just called Kanye West a jackass for interrupting the speech. And it's just basically exactly what he said was, President Obama just called Kanye West a jackass for his outburst at VMAs when Taylor Swift won. Now that's presidential. You know, it's weird to me. That doesn't sound very anchorish to be saying things like that, to be tweeting and to be, gossiping.
Well, here's the problem with Twitter, right? It's become this kind of stream of consciousness thing.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
don't really think about what they say.
Right.
Which for most people doesn't matter. You know, if you tell me what you're thinking, I don't care.
The co-anchor of Nightline.
Right.
Can
if
I
you're,
ask
if you're
question?
Someone who has a number of people who are following you because you're famous or whatever, I think, unless you're some idiot celebrity, you should exercise some sort of restraint, especially if you're a journalist.
Mike, you're going to ask in a cynical tone why we care.
Going to ask a related question, which is if we can move on from the whole, video music awards thing. I would be completely unaware that these awards even happened if it were not for this outburst, which is really not that exciting.
But
the awards
are boring. It's the outburst that people tune in for, and that's always what seems to happen. But
come on, I could issue a better outburst. like six times a day.
Yeah, but you can't interrupt bigger stars. You got to be able to do that too. The other interesting thing about network or internet related parts of this, if you try to find that clip anywhere, it's been taken down by Viacom every place. The only place you can possibly see a clip is through Viacom themselves. They control the entire distribution of it. If you put it on YouTube, it won't even make it on there. They'll use some kind of algorithm to figure it out.
Does Viacom own CNN? Or
It's MTV they own, and that's where
right,
it
but
aired.
I've seen it on CNN, on CNN's website, so I'm curious to see if that's been taken down.
You've seen
down.
The entire video?
Journalistic fair use. No, that would be journalistic fair use.
See, so it's possible.
They're just using the excerpt there. So yeah, it's possible, but it has to go through somebody else, which is...
The entire clip being considered
not the entire
use?
Clip, no, but probably part of it is I mean, simply showing that part with Kanye
yeah,
would be...
That's the part
or they licensed it. I mean, CNN can afford licensing.
They might have done that, because couldn't you say that YouTube also is journalistic fair use? Could you not say
this
that?
This is the thing is, like, you know, all these boundaries are so blurred right now, and it's just the, you know, the fact that Viacom, it's surprising actually that Viacom is doing it, because as I remember, I think Paramount, which, unless I'm mistaken, is Viacom, is turning a blind eye to a lot of fair use stuff, probably because they own Star Trek, and Star Trek fans, you know, are, you know, rabid fan producers.
I'm not sure if Paramount and Viacom are still together. They might
be. Are they not anymore?
Viacom and CBS are together. That much I'm pretty sure about.
I don't remember anymore, but... Yeah. Yeah, so I mean that's the thing is these boundaries are also blurred. What are you going to do? I mean, and I don't feel like any major company is really taking a smart, you know, view on that.
Yeah, but going back to the off the record thing, in an age where you could type something into your phone and instantly it's visible to the entire world, I don't think there really is an off the record anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's foolish to think that anything you say in a TV studio is going to be kept off the record, but to have it immediately go out like that, I think that's kind of funny in and of itself. That's a bit of fun there, a bit of interesting sidelights, but nothing to compare to the fun that happened in Washington, D.C. with CNN. You guys heard about this, right? Where on September 11th, there was supposedly an attack going on with the Coast Guard. Basically, CNN was listening to a Coast Guard frequency, and they heard what sounded like some kind of confrontation where the Coast Guard was telling this boat not to advance, and they said that they fired 10 rounds at them. And then CNN was showing live video of the actual boats trying to get around each other. And supposedly they tried to contact the Coast Guard and got no information from them. No other law enforcement agency knew what was going on. So this went on for a good while. People thought that there was some kind of possible terrorist act happening in Washington, D.C. And eventually it turned out that that it was just a training exercise that the Coast Guard was involved in. Now, CNN has been raked over the coals for reporting this. But do you guys see what they did wrong? Because I'm having trouble understanding exactly what it is. Is that right?
I don't really see them doing much wrong. It seems like there was a lack of information on the Coast Guard's part, if anything.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, they probably should have... I don't know. Did they announce this in any way? I didn't hear about any sort of announcement.
No, apparently they do this all the time, and they don't tell
that's
anybody.
True.
And that's the thing. No one noticed before, nobody listened to that radio channel before.
If they do it so much that you know, that it's too much to advertise every time it happens, at least make sure that if a major news outlet comes to you saying what the hell is going on...
Yeah.
That you can.
Or the DC police were racing to the scene because they didn't know what was going on.
See, the thing about it is, there's no reason not to announce these things, at least to news sources that it might pick it up. Because, I mean, when I was in Finland, you know, you'd turn on the news and every night they'd say on the news, these are the activities, you know, that where they're using live ammunition tomorrow. And
what on the news they tell you that?
Yeah, they would say it. So these are the areas.
So avoid this street because we'll be firing machine guns.
There wouldn't be streets, but they'd say, you know, the area behind this base may have, you know, whatever.
Sure. Wow.
But they would announce the activities in advance because that way people knew either people wouldn't go there. You know, if you were in your boat, you wouldn't like the base I was on an island. So you wouldn't go near the island because a shell might come over.
But you have to watch the news to know these things.
Well, but if it applies to you or if you are the news, then it's good to have, access to this kind of information.
Yeah, and I'm sure the rest of you guys remember, I think it was earlier this year when the president's aircraft was flying low over the city to take some photos, and they neglected to tell people what they were going to be doing beforehand as well.
Yeah, well, in that case, though, they told local authorities, but they told local authorities not to tell other people,
yes.
Which was really silly. Bernie, about the actual frequency they used, is this something that a lot of people be listening to normally, this Coast Guard frequency?
Yes, actually, this is one of the common VHF marine frequencies. It's and if you buy just a VHF marine radio, they're available either handheld or you can, you know, about the size of a CB radio, you can mount them in your boat. This is just one of the channels. This is known as channel 81A. I don't recall the specific frequency. I think it's 157 point something megahertz. Anybody can overhear this stuff just fine. This specific frequency, channel 81A, is reserved for Coast Guard use only. Supposedly, according to the FCC's website, I researched this, it's for environmental use for the Coast Guard. But in any case, they were using it for training purposes, which is fine. The Coast Guard can use that frequency. It's theirs to use. The problem I have with this is CNN had somebody in their staff who was monitoring a radio scanner, which is fine. They should be able to do that. And they heard this, overheard parts of this exercise, didn't know what they were listening to, because apparently they weren't really skilled in listening to this kinds of traffic, which goes on all the time. They called the Coast Guard twice. The person they reached at the Coast Guard didn't know the exercises were going on. They said, I don't have any information about what's going on. And then the CNN went ahead in trying to get the jump on the gun over all the other networks and reported that shots were fired. In fact, shots were not fired. And, in fact, if they listen to the radio traffic, you hear a Coast Guard person saying the words bang, bang, bang to simulate fire.
Right.
So, yeah, and then what happened after that, the reason this got out of control is that CNN reported it, and then Reuters picked it up, and then Fox picked it up. It just started echoing around in the media echo chamber, mm-hmm. and that caused a panic, and that caused the, Reagan Airport to shut down for 20 minutes. Planes couldn't land. Police were running around. That was going on because the media echo chamber was reporting completely unconfirmed information. So I'm going to call out CNN on this for having done poor reporting.
Well, I think that might be a little harsh because they did try and reach the Coast Guard. They did focus their cameras on the actual scene where you could see boats trying to get past other boats. And in fact, there was one of the quotes from the broadcast. Vessel, if you don't slow down, stop your vessel, you will be fired upon. The Coast Guard themselves say that it's likely that they reported that weapons were fired as part of the exercise. I just wonder, why is it necessary for them to use an open frequency to say things that aren't really happening when they could just as easily have the exercise, I don't know, either through an encrypted channel or through loudspeakers or some other way where someone's not going to listen in by accident and think something's happening that's not really happening?
I think virtually all radio communications used by law enforcement and military and police should, and agencies like the Coast Guard, should not be encrypted. I think we should be able to hear what they're doing. It's our tax dollars at work, and we should be able to hear what's going on.
Well, okay, but we should be able to understand what's going on. And I mean,
that's CNN's responsibility for knowing how to do their
job. Wait, how is it CNN's responsibility to know when the Coast Guard's not telling them the truth?
The Coast Guard did not tell them something that was not true. The secretary who answered the phone mm-hmm. was not personally aware of the exercise going on. The exercises apparently go on all the time, but the secretary can't be responsible for going on. Yes, there was some communication, but the CNN reported that shots were fired.
Yeah, because it was said over the radio that shots were fired, and in fact, no other law enforcement agency had any clue what was going on either, and I think that's on the Coast Guard to let them know that this is not really happening in case somebody panics. What if it was a civilian that heard this instead and thought something was going on? They wouldn't have gotten any confirmation.
They would freak out. That's what happens. You know, this gets back to what the Bush administration was doing with reporting raw intelligence. This is what we call raw intelligence. People who don't know what they're looking at are going to misinterpret the information, and when they report it as the truth, all hell breaks loose.
Okay, but if you wait for the government to give their version as to what's going on, you're giving them so much time to paint the picture in a way that's not accurate. When you see right in front of you what's going on, hey, there's boats here trying to get past each other. There's radio traffic of gunshots being fired, and the Coast Guard is giving no comment or saying that they don't know what's going on, and nor the law enforcement agency knows what's happening. That's a story. That's something I think people deserve to know about, before the government says, okay, here's what's really going on. I think the way they did this is something that deserves to be reported, if not what was happening itself. Yes, Gus?
But journalists do, just as a professional obligation, do need to triangulate things. Mm-hmm. That is just something that they have to do. And that is how we keep them from yelling fire and acquire, or how they keep themselves.
Right.
From
I just see they had four different things going on that all together, I think that's a story. If they just listen to the radio and they just just reported, hey, someone's saying on the radio that there's some kind of confrontation going on. Yeah, that's not a story. That's irresponsible. But that coupled with what they could see and what they were being told or not being told and what other agencies didn't know about, you know, I think there was a lot going on there.
It seems like they weren't just trying to report on raw information without any background research being done. They were calling up the Coast Guard and trying to find out what was going on.
Not just the Coast Guard, but all kinds of other agencies as well.
Right, but unfortunately, there seems that there was a lack of communication or there wasn't some kind of thing put in place for people to find out within the system what's going on. And because of that, this lack of communication, and you have a panic.
Isn't this something that we keep coming back to, is a lack of communication between governmental agencies? And I think nothing shows that better than this. Mm. Something that, you know, really the most play this story is getting is the fact that how could this happen on September 11th? How could they have this kind of exercise? That's irrelevant. They can have an exercise whenever they want to have an exercise, but at least, you know, have some basic safety rules in place so that you don't cause a panic, which is what they did.
Now, I also agree that, you know, maybe encrypted channels are a bad idea, but there should at least be some sort of alternate channel for training exercises where, you know, it's used as a substitute for the
general
public channel.
That's a good idea. So you know anything on this channel is not really happening.
So it's simply used in the exact same way the public channel would be used. And
that way people would know from the start that, hey, this is likely to be, it's the fiction channel.
Yeah, this is the Coast Guard fiction channel.
Yeah, if you can have all these different channels on cable, why not on the scanner as well?
Yeah, I got to agree that you can't really blame CNN with this. They took what they had and they did the best they could and ran with it. I think they got a little overexcited and jumped the gun, but I think this really, who's at fault here are the entities at the Coast Guard and everything when they were planning this exercise to fail to spread the news of what they were doing, that they were playing war games out there.
I'm not convinced that anyone's at fault. I mean, CNN reported this story. They learned that later that it was an error. I assume they said, oops, this was an erroneous report, and they retracted the story. I don't know what more we could ask for from anyone.
Well, they also seemed a bit miffed that this kind of thing was going on September 11th. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is that why didn't anybody know what was happening? Why couldn't any story be verified?
Yeah, you know, some people might say that they were jumping the gun, but this is how, you know,
these stories are
you know,
are made.
They're all the news stations are competing with each other, trying to get to break the story before everybody else.
The story
else.
Was broken that the this Japanese were bombing San Diego. Yes, Bernie.
Emmanuel, there's two key points to this story. One, CNN did not report that one of our staffers overheard on a police scanner something that sounded like this was going on. The second problem with this is that now this is going to be used as an excuse to encrypt all kinds of government radio traffic because CNN did not do due diligence, I don't feel, in accurately reporting what they overheard and how they got their information.
Well, in this particular case, it just seems really silly to have that kind of thing being broadcast where anybody could have heard it and not understood it. It should have been explained in some manner. And just saying the words bang, bang, bang doesn't necessarily mean that it's fake. That could have been one of the evil people saying that. Who knows?
And at the end of the transmission, they said something to the effect that this test is over.
Well, yeah, at the end they said that. So what, should we wait for terrorist acts to finish before we report them?
Well, reporting was done well after that was said. So, you know, again, I call it, the Coast Guard can't be telling the public about every single exercise you're doing. All that's just not feasible.
I think that's something that Freedom of Information should demand, that we know when they're testing and when they're going to be ramming their boats into each other and firing rounds or saying they're firing rounds. I think that's something we should know as well.
Well, we disagree on that then.
I don't want to beat this dead horse too incredibly much, but it's sort of an interesting thing to think about. Like, what would if this had happened in the days of, say, Edward R. Murrow? The news was only on 2-3 times a day. So, I mean, to some extent, this is another excuse for me to say, die 24-hour news cycle, die, because, you know, it's they have all the space to fill, so they're going to end up prioritizing stories which, you know, are not.
So you think we should just have the news on for a half hour a day?
I don't think that we should spend so much time dwelling on things that otherwise wouldn't be newsworthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of things wouldn't get covered then.
We
wouldn't.
And I'd be much happier for that.
Yeah, you could watch reality shows more.
No, I'm just saying that, I mean, the stuff that is covered, 90% of it is garbage anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when we just had news on for an hour or half hour a day, 90% of it was still garbage back then. I think that's always going to happen no matter what.
But now talking about that they said, you know, bang, bang, bang in the broadcast. Well, where in the broadcast was this? Did CNN come in before or after? When did they hear this? Did they?
It's impossible to know that.
Was that when they decided to retract it? But, you know, talking about that they had at the end saying this, this drill is over. Again, something else you could do with this kind of thing is repeatedly throughout the entire broadcast is have some kind of cycling thing that every now and then says,
common sense
this
things
is
apply.
A drill. Right. This is not real, like they do with the tests of the emergency system on TVs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But also, where was this done? Was this done in an open area? Because if
so... Yeah, it was done right next to the Pentagon, which also wasn't very smart.
Well, I mean, like, can other boats, private boats, come sailing on by? The reason I say that is, you know...
It was a restricted zone of some sort.
It was a restricted zone.
But that made it seem as if it was a serious issue because why is this boat in the restricted zone?
We're claiming that the media spends too much time harping on unimportant issues. Meanwhile, we've been on the air 20 minutes. We talked about celebrities interrupting each other in one other story. Enough
Mike
already.
Mike gets to pick the next
story. You're welcome to tune
Mike's
into another story. Station, Mike. I mean, anytime. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, this is just reminding me of the old War of the Worlds broadcast with Orson Welles. And even that, they explained in the beginning and at the end of it that it was all fake, that it was a drama. But people tuned in missing that announcement. And
yeah, we can laugh at those people and say they don't have a clue. But, you know, we could fall for that easily, too.
And the irony is that every time that broadcast has been played full to end, as far as I know of, three times that I know of, there was panics each time.
Yeah. I mean, I was involved in something like that on Long Island with a meltdown at a nuclear power plant. It didn't really happen. And, yeah, people still panic, even though every 15 minutes we announced that something was going on. So, yeah, it's not always enough. Okay, what else? Speaking of emergencies and things like that, in England, there are trials underway of a UK service that allows people to contact emergency services by text message. The system is aimed at people who can't make the normal voice calls to the emergency service, which is 3-9s over there, or 112. It works both ways. The service, what it does, it sends the text to a voice relay assistant who then speaks the text message to the emergency service and then texts back their reply. And if successful, this government initiative, backed by Ofcom, would become permanent in early 2010. Seems like a good idea. Seems something that is common sense that we should have. I don't know if we have anything like that here. Yes, Red Hack?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if there's no other way to get a message out, but at the same time, you don't want to encourage people to do this. I heard of a similar story that also was in the UK where these two girls like fell down into some sewer or something, and rather than call 911 or whatever 112 over there, they updated Twitter or like Facebook or something like that, and they said we're stuck in this drain. Please somebody help us on Facebook. I think
this is what's happening.
You know, I mean, it's a good idea if it's a last resort.
Well,
but
this is for handicapped people. Can't speak.
Yeah, but people are gonna do it anyway. It's some idiot, you know, teenager is gonna. I'm sorry.
Well,
you could
make the same argument for any service.
And they're gonna text, "Oh, I need help," instead of calling.
But basically, they'll get the idea of
it. Why is that a problem if they text the correct people? Like, as long as the correct people get the correct message, I don't really care what medium.
Well, it's a matter of time, also. I mean.
So the more emergency services we have, the more they'll be abused, so the less emergency services we should have.
Yes, we should just get rid of all the cop numbers, the 911 and everything. That way we don't have to worry about them being abused.
But here's the thing. This leads me to ask another question, because we were playing with phones a couple of weeks ago, and I was blown away by this. You guys with your iPhones and your Android phones, you're used to this. I didn't know this existed. I think, Dotred, you showed me. You can go onto Google on your phone and speak the search term, and it actually will display it on the Google search bar, and you can immediately look up without typing anything on your phone particular strings. I thought that was amazing, and the voice recognition is extremely good. What they don't have, what no one seems to have developed yet, is a way to do that with text messages, where you simply speak into your phone and a text message gets sent. I think that would be great to do. I mean, I could then text and drive without having to take my eyes off the road and, you know, cause all kinds of problems.
That might take too much to put in a single phone, which means in order to do that.
You say that now, but in 2 years, you know that's not going to be the case.
But so as of right now, you might need to do something along the lines of you speak into the phone, it's sent to Google, Google transliterates it, transposes it, and then the text is sent out.
I have to say, I have... a service, it's now available from Google, but I've gotten it for a while from a different company where it takes your voicemail and turns it into text, which is great because I don't have to listen to my voicemail.
Yeah, Google
but
does
but
that.
But it's it's really
Wait,
buggy.
Why is that great? You don't have to listen to your voicemail.
Because I don't like listening to my voicemail.
You can read faster than people can talk a lot of sometimes.
So you prefer reading to hearing?
Yes.
All right. That's just when they take away senses, we'll have you down on the list for I don't need my ears, I'll use my eyes instead.
Well, they're not taking away a sense. They're simply switching it. One is faster than the other.
You can be reading and listening at the same time.
Have you ever got a voicemail? People don't know how to leave voicemails. They're like,
oh, and they know how to text. Texting is like
No. But then I can skip over the whole like nonsense part and just read what they want.
Uh huh. Okay. Well, it's just the translation seems to get some profound things wrong sometimes. Like instead of call somebody, sometimes it says kill somebody, and that leads to all sorts of misunderstandings.
Well, that's why we need to use it more and more, so that way they get better at it.
Yeah, I guess it is fascinating technology, though. But I really would like to have that feature. I think that would be cool, and I'm sure they're going to have it in a couple of years.
So when I start getting Emmanuel. Text messages from you that are complete gibberish, I'll know that it's a bug in the text to speech algorithm.
Or it might be an encrypted message. Yes, Bernie.
I just want to say back to the original story where there's text messaging going to emergency responders. I agree with Mike. It's a good idea because up until now, at least in the U.S., there does exist a version of 911 for hearing impaired people, for people who use TTYs and TDDs, telecommunication devices for the deaf and teletypes to send these information. But most cell phones aren't capable of sending. That kind of information, that protocol. I was in the post office a few months ago, and I ran into a couple of hearing impaired people who were signing to each other, and I started communicating to them, not in sign, but just through using our phones, just typing text messages to each other on a text editor. It was fun talking with them. I asked them if the phones they both had one of these HTC. G1 phones. It uses the Google Android operating system. It's only available on T-Mobile. I asked them if they can send TTY messages and TDD messages on that, so it'll cross protocols. And they said yes, and they demonstrated it to me. So that's one of the few phones, the HTC G1, which is a Google Android OS based phone, only available through T-Mobile, where you can actually communicate TTY and TDD messages to emergency responders as it's set up now. I do think, as Mike said, it should be available, though, as SMS, because that's a very, very common protocol now. So it's a question of technology not catching up with the needs of, or at least policy, not using technology to catch up with the needs of impaired people.
I'm trying to remember whether we talked on the show or whether we were talking sort of casually in other times about whether there's plans that are text only, so that you're not actually paying for a voice plan, you're just paying for text. Did we talk about that at some point?
I don't think we talked about that, just text and no voice.
Because there's a call for it in the deaf community. I was actually researching this online because I personally...
Isn't that just like having a two-way pager?
Do you longer text messages this way? I'm not really sure.
But people don't have two-way pagers anymore and you can't really get them. Mm-hmm. And everyone has a cell phone.
Besides, you don't get all the other bells and whistles they can get on the phone.
Yeah.
That's sort of, that's, I think, a question. Actually, it would be great if we had listeners who could tell us more about any plans that are out there. Because last I checked, I found a website that said, the deaf community was kind of peeved that they weren't finding plans that were just for text, and they couldn't convince the phone company to do that for them.
That's an interesting idea.
So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's what I want because I hate the quality of cell phones and the audio.
Go ahead, Bernie.
And
there is such a service. I wish I could remember the name of it, but there is a product that does not handle voice communications. It's text and web browsing only. I forget which carrier it's on. I forget who makes the device, but it's out there.
Okay, no doubt one of our listeners will call us and tell us almost immediately.
I think I know what you're talking about, but I think it's email and browsing only. I don't think there's text involved.
No, it does include text. That's the primary market for this particular device is text users only.
Jim, were you expressing an interest in devices of this sort?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Okay, well, Jim definitely could benefit from that as well. Okay, more technology advances. Every mobile phone in Japan may be installed with software to block illegally copied music. If the world's first such system is approved by talks that start in Tokyo next week, the talks between the Recording Industry Association of Japan, that's right, the RIAJ, mobile phone companies and music download sites aim to agree on new anti-piracy measures by the end of the year. A system could be in place by 2011. Now, building anti-piracy software into the main device on which young Japanese people listen to music could make Japan the first country in the world to find an effective answer to illegal downloads. Of course, I'm reading this from Financial Times, so that's the tone they're going to take. Under the system proposed by the RIAJ, whenever a user tries to play a song, software in their mobile phone would ask a security server whether it is covered by copyright. And if so, and the phone did not have a code to indicate it was bought legally, the song would not play. Wow. That's things can change very radically.
They're all talking about how effective this could be, but I think something they might be avoiding is the idea of jailbroken phones.
Uh-huh.
You know, this, especially as these phones turn more and more into computers, people are having more of a need to do this kind of thing. You know, if you jailbreak your phone, all of a sudden the software goes away.
I just wonder. So I actually bought a CD this week for the first time in a while because it was a French artist and I couldn't find it.
Do you need help using it?
I took the CD and put it in my computer. Now I just have MP3s like I really wanted. Mm-hmm. But what if I put one of the? What if I were Japanese and I put one of those MP3s on my phone? Would I be able to play it?
You know, it depends. It depends on what kind of software you run and how legitimate it is.
Kind of, you know, what does this apply to? I mean, if I take my large collection and I turn it into MP3s, I didn't digitally purchase them, so how do I have a code that allows me to use it on my player?
Mm-hmm. It's incredible to me whenever I see iTunes in use. How it's, I mean, there are ways of doing it, obviously, but if you go strictly by through a Mac. You wind up with a copy of a song that you can't copy anyplace else, or that you can only copy maybe two or three times. Whereas if I buy something on some online site like Amazon or something like that, I get an MP3 that I can copy as many times as I want. So it's weird to me why people do things in a certain way, pay the same amount of money and get less control over something that they bought. Whereas you buy the CD, you can always make copies and an infinite number.
Well, you also have to take into account that not all artists and songs are available on all the different services, and mm-hmm. that's probably due to the recording.
But I'm talking about the same artist, just through a different service having more restrictions.
Yeah, from putting the moral issues aside, whether they should do this, I don't know how in the blue hell they think they're going to actually implement this. Uh-huh. Because, you know, you could buy a perfectly legal music file, change one character in the ID3 tags, and all of a sudden it's a completely different hash, and it won't be recognized as the same song by whatever server. And you know, you can get a perfectly legal free MP3 off the net, and which the server also won't recognize.
You're forgetting one thing, Rob, which is that this is being worked on by Japanese people, so it might actually work.
Very good point.
Well, it's amazing, too, because for all the complaints that the industry has about, quote-unquote, illegal downloading, there are people doing ridiculous things like paying for ringtones and paying again for the same ringtones when they go to a different phone. And I wonder, are they going to have this for the ringtones as well? If you don't pay for your ringtone, your phone won't ring or something, or they report it to somebody. It's so silly.
There are also, I mean, in terms of going back to the technology question, there are ways to fingerprint the audio in which, you know, case it wouldn't just be a hash of the file or a hash of the metadata. It would actually be analyzing the audio. I don't know how technically feasible that would be, especially on a mobile phone platform. But again, they are Japanese, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, go ahead, that right.
Well, if they were to say a fingerprint on the audio, it might be some special thing in a certain part of the audio that they pick up. In which case, again, either way, you're talking about it being people who try to copy it. This is one of the reasons why trying to secure the copyrights for this kind of stuff on devices that people personally own and control is so difficult. Because, like what we've all said, what Rob said, there's so many ways to get around this.
I just noticed, speaking of fingerprinting, I just noticed actually another service that is doing some fingerprinting now, and that is YouTube. One of my videos on the media show popped up with a little flag that said, "You may be using somebody else's content," the other day. And mm-hmm. it flagged one of my videos, which is interesting because we've definitely fair used a number of bits of content from various videos. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure whether they're going off the audio or whether they're going off the images.
This is what they're doing with the VMA Awards, where if you put any part of it up or any commercial program, it catches it.
This is a particularly interesting case because the thing that it caught was us using an old copy of Free to Be You and Me.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty degraded. Like, I'm guessing somebody probably, you know, videotaped it and put it up that way. And so I'm wondering how much degradation can go on before the fingerprinting stops working.
Yeah, they're probably fingerprinting the audio only because that would be easier, probably, especially under degradation. You know, if you videotaped a TV screen, the audio would probably still be able to
find that, repost it without sound and see if it gets flagged as well.
That's actually the sound. I know, I mean, they're harder on sound anyway. They don't seem to be as hard, you know, going after video, but they definitely go after people. They rip people's soundtracks off of their videos all the time.
Now, see, I'm curious, what happens if you were to try to play with the quality of the sound, or if they're doing the video, you know, or add in some background noise, you know, will they still be able to fingerprint it properly?
But that stinks too, because then you have to basically take something that you produced that had a certain, you know, audio track to it or whatever, and then degrade it to try to get around.
Well, we'll figure out a better way of doing it. We have to know how it works.
Maybe not too much for a person to be able to tell, but just enough to make a machine screw up.
I think the audio fingerprinting is pretty good. I've taken some pretty bad audio files and run them through fingerprinting algorithms to try to find what they are, and it works pretty well. And you know, there could be skips and pops, and it doesn't really make a difference.
I don't think this is the interesting question. I think the interesting question is how do we create and use services that actually respect our rights of fair use and all this stuff? Like, if YouTube doesn't want my business, like, I don't know why I should spend all this time giving it to them.
What business?
If I create content, my content, Gus's content. If YouTube doesn't want Gus's content, like, why in the world do business with YouTube? They're not that nice.
Well, I mean, you know, if you can spread that message to absolutely everybody in the country and the massive audience that YouTube manages to control, then sure, absolutely. Go ahead and let them know about that software.
Are there that many people finding your content through YouTube through other means?
What other means? Let's name some other means, because I'd like to know what these other means are.
Democracy, which is not called something else, right?
Democracy?
Miro.
Right.
Let's get our name straight. What's this called?
Let me answer the first question first, which is how are people finding content? And I've seen Gus's content because Gus has told me about it, and she posts it to blogs and other sources of information. And I'm sure that's how most people are finding your content. And if your content was... if you are announcing your content on and hosting it with some other service, I'm not really convinced that many fewer people would find it.
Okay, but somebody in Paducah, Kentucky, for instance, will never talk to Gus
her content anyway.
Yes, you can find something on YouTube pretty easily, but if you say there are alternatives, I'm asking, what are these alternatives that people can use?
I'm interested in the people who are simply not finding any of this content at all. I'm interested in the people who are, you know, having a hard time getting online and things like that. So the question is, how do you reach those people?
Yeah.
You know, the people who are still relying on other media, they're still relying on radio, they're still relying on TV, and they don't end up finding URLs until Oprah says, hey, check out Twitter, there'll be some free KFC, it'll be great.
Yeah,
you know, so I mean, like, that is sort of my concern is not, you know, not the people who are managing to be, you know, highfalutin enough that they, you know, they know people that we know, but the people who don't know.
I'm still waiting to hear an alternative. Alternative name. Are there any?
Yeah, an alternative service to YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah, there's Blip TV, there's Vimeo, there's a whole bunch.
Okay. I don't know what word you just said. It sounded like it was Russian. How do you spell that?
Vimeo.
Vimeo.
But
actually, they're not. Their licensing terms aren't that great either.
Yeah.
So go with Blip.tv.
Blip.tv.
Blip. Yeah. Yep. Like the thing that appears on radar screens.
What about Miro?
Miro is not a... Miro won't host your video. Miro, which is a great software product put out by a nonprofit called the Participatory Culture Foundation.
And how do you spell that?
Miro, M-I-R-O. I think their website is getmiro.com or org, maybe.
Okay.
And they allow you to take video wherever it's hosted and play it all in one central location, and it's pretty neat, but they won't host your video for you.
There's also, if I remember, there's a website, and maybe you know the URL, that will compares licensing terms for different video hosting services.
Ooh.
That's true. And I don't know the URL.
Well, you can Google that. There is a comparison.
Google that as well. Okay. Speaking of rights, consumers, things like that, there's this thing known as the Right to Repair Bill. Now, apparently in Massachusetts, there's this bill that's being passed through legislative process that basically, will make it so that you can repair a car regardless of what the auto people say you have the right to do. Now, NFIB, which, and I'm sorry, I didn't write down what NFIB stands for, but there's some kind of
the Association of Small Businesses.
Is that what they are?
Yeah, if I remember correctly. Okay. And then the other one is the larger auto industry.
They say they've joined a coalition of businesses lobbying for the Right to Repair bill in Massachusetts because it supports the rights of independent car repair shops to get critical information from automakers. This issue is about the right of small business owners to be in business. They say, we believe very strongly that small businesses offer superior service and price compared to large companies, and that is why we are involved in this issue. Now, the international automakers have a slightly different take on this. In a hearing on, this is their press release, they say, in a hearing on so-called right to repair legislation, a representative of international automakers cautioned Massachusetts lawmakers against burdening dealers and automakers with additional cost to correct a problem that doesn't exist. They say they found no evidence of a systematic problem related to the inability of customers or auto repair shops to acquire the equipment needed to repair cars or access information needed to make timely repairs. In fact, the FTC found only two relevant complaints as a result of an automated search of its more than 4 million complaints during the previous 10-year period, and none in the random sample of some 6,700 complaints related in any way to auto repair. Boy, it sounds like they're really
this. We need some clarity. We haven't even talked about what part of repair this is. I'm trying to remember who posted this article. Was that Rob?
That was Bernie, I believe.
It was Bernie. Bernie, can you talk a little bit more about what this right to repair, what kind of repairs it's talking about?
Well, yeah. A lot of independent auto service organizations, like, you know, your friendly family neighborhood mechanic, they can't repair almost any modern cars. Suppose you have some error light in your dashboard that comes on, it says check engine or whatever. The way a lot of cars are, like, for instance, Volvos, I have an old Volvo, so it doesn't relate to that, but any Volvo made after, I think, 2006, you're out of luck, because only Volvo dealers have the ability to interface with that computer in such a way to turn that light off and to properly diagnose the problem. There are all these ODBC2 codes, which are a certain standard code and protocol for everybody to get information about what's going on with their car. But there's a lot of proprietary codes that auto manufacturers use as well, and they're hiding that proprietary information from both the owners of their products, you know, their customers, and from independent service organizations that service cars. I think you mentioned, Gus, that your dad is really frustrated with this. He's a real car geek, and he has trouble with this too. Didn't he say that?
Right, he did. And there's I was talking to him right before the show. He may actually call in, and we may be able to talk to him more about this. But there were two kinds of car systems he was talking about. One is the car system or the computer system on board a car that deals with things like fuel injection rates and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of sort of people working on overclocking and things like that, special kinds of gimmicks that way. So that is one system. It's actually mechanical stuff. And the other one is more of a reporting system. So it is the system where your car records that you had an accident, and right before that it was recording what speed you were going. So that is something that automakers will, or whoever will want to give to the insurance company. It's more like a black box on a plane.
I'm not sure that's a bad idea, having a black box. I mean, yeah, it can be used in an Orwellian way, but it's also good for, it would cut a lot of court time when people are saying one thing happened when something else happened, when someone slams into somebody without hitting their brakes. It's nice to know this kind of thing.
So, but that's, it's provided you don't have to black box the black box. You know, if you can actually look into the black box and take a look at what's, at what's been going on, I think that would be really neat for anybody.
Well, yeah, of course, fraudulently changing the black box to make it seem like you were doing something, or to make it seem like somebody else was doing it. I mean, imagine what cops can do with
make
this.
Make it read only. Yeah.
But what you say definitely speaks true to my experiences as far as having the smart car, which was imported from Canada. Oh my God, a few weeks ago, the fan belt broke on that thing. And I brought it to one of those roadside service places. And would you know, they could not find even a fan belt that would fit the thing. They couldn't do the computer calculations. It was all proprietary. Even the smart car people in this country aren't allowed to access the foreign smart car information. They have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to get the right computers for this. It's insane. We had to buy parts off of eBay. These are mechanics doing this. It shouldn't be this difficult and this this hard just to fix a car. I mean, back in the old days, anybody could fix a car. They could learn how to do it and do a good job or do a bad job, but they could, you know, at least get their hands dirty and figure it out.
And my dad did. He taught himself.
All right. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Taking phone calls in the few minutes we have left. Mike.
I'm all in favor of the right to repair things, but I'm curious, like, why automobiles only? It seems to me there are many more interesting devices that I'd much rather hack than an automobile.
Well, how many things are we prevented from getting involved in?
We just did a story about cell phones that are going to have digital rights management.
Going to, yes, but right now
they already do. Mm-hmm. Apple cell phones already have digital rights management preventing you from taking a song and copying it to another device.
You set it right on the radio. You don't have to buy an Apple phone. You do have to buy a car, though.
I don't.
Well, okay, you know my point. My point is there are no open source cars out there that you can simply have anybody fix.
Cars used to be open source. Cars
okay, but they're not now.
That's a huge issue.
So in 5 years when there's no more open source phones, or there's not really any open source phones now, but 5 years from now when all phones have digital rights management, are you going to say I should have bought a different phone
five years ago? That'll be a comparable subject. Right now it's not.
I think the way that we can prevent ourselves from getting into such a state is through regulation of the market and saying that manufacturers have to provide their customers with the right to modify the devices they buy, and I see no reason why that should be limited to cars.
Okay, the only reason it's limited to cars right now, well, not limited to, but the reason we're discussing cars is because it's already happening to all cars, and there's no Ubuntu cars out there. I wish there were. It'd really be kind of cool. But you're kind of screwed, and if you're a mechanic, you're equally screwed because you can't fix things.
I think Mike is just saying that the problem doesn't necessarily need to be solved for cars only, and that this kind of legislation can apply to a broader range.
Well, what kind of legislation would that be? Legislation that applies
about the right to
all technology.
Take the bill that's being proposed in Massachusetts and replace the word car with device, and you'll probably have very close to a very good bill.
No, but you want to get the car guys angry, because if you get the car guys angry, you've got a really, really good lobby on your side.
I have no real interest in car guys.
I find that very general bills don't tend to go places. You need to be very specific and then use that as a precedent to affect other things.
So then what you want to do is create a special right for cars, which I guess is better than no rights at all.
It's not a special right. It's the right that we all used to have.
It's a precedent, too. Yeah. It's a precedent. If you begin to argue with cars, then you can begin to argue from Linux, and then more people who understand cars understand computers.
Guys, I'd like to take some phone calls from our listeners to see what kind of opinions are out there, because we only have a few minutes left. And you know what? We're not on next week. We're preempted next week. So, let's see if we can take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
I have a lot to say about everything you guys were touching on tonight.
All right, don't say too much.
No problem. Fast. Kanye West, who cares?
Okay, fine.
The Coast Guard thing,
mm-hmm.
We have no right as civilians to know anything what's going on. That was just something that was overblown, right?
Okay.
If the newscasts, as far as the 24-hour news media, all they want to do is get ratings, how can we even trust the news?
Well, yeah, but that's always been the case.
But it's a little bit more now, so with a larger news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know how there's always two sides? There's never any truth. There's only two opposing sides.
Okay.
And they get them to fight and fight and fight and fight.
Okay.
You know?
Anything else?
As far as the cars and the Volvo tools?
Yes.
I own a Volvo.
Okay.
You could find everything on the internet that you need. You just need specific scan tools to get the OBD2 things.
Hmm.
The OBD2 codes, mm-hmm. There are specific tools that need to be hooked up to specific parts of the car so you're able to pull the codes.
So,
more than just like the OBD2 connector. If I want to fix my air conditioning vents or anything like that, or any of the controls, there's a specific $350 tool that I need to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I could do all the work myself.
Bernie, does this make sense to you, owning a Volvo yourself?
Well, I have an older Volvo, but for my information, some of the newer Volvos after 2006 have some highly proprietary codes that really require you to buy like a $10,000 system and license it and whatever to access all the information you need to really effectively service a Volvo. I could be mistaken, but that's what more than one mechanic has told me.
What year Volvo?
Anything after 2006.
What do you own?
I have an old 240.
Okay, so that's okay. I got the last OBD1, just before they went to OBD2, so everything I can find everything I need for that car on the net, luckily.
Yeah, but after 2006, you're out of luck.
Okay, we're going to have to move on from car talk here, but thanks thanks for the call and thanks for all the thoughts. Let's see if we can move on to another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Thank you. Well, you were talking about the cars that were getting inaccessible.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we had a Daewoo, and that was kind of the pinnacle of that. It's a discontinued car, and then they found out immediately after buying it that the manufacturer had gone out of business. But GM, that was okay because GM was going to pick up the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, GM had their problems. And at the end of the day, you've got, like, you know, one place within a couple hundred miles that can fix it because it gets so specialized. But mm-hmm. to some degree, it just seems like that's going on everywhere. And you have to take apart the engines to actually repair anything now. You know, it's like you had a $10 part and they had to disassemble the engine to get to it.
Yeah, my light burned out in my smart car. I've got to take apart the whole hood to get to it. And nobody knows how to do that. So, yeah, I hear you there.
But just in general, there does seem to be a bit of a profit motive in locking things down so that they're hard to fix and hard to interchange. I finally heard something about, I've been waiting a long time to hear something about the Kindle, about someone, you know, hacking that. And I finally heard at an OzCon Ignite session, someone talking about using a Nokia tablet to compile some Ubuntu packages and load it through the USB port and things like that. But the whole idea that the objects you buy belong more to the company than they do to the person who bought them just seems to be getting really entrenched.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for those thoughts, and we're going to have to leave it at that. Definitely interesting topics. You can write to us, oth@2600.com, if you have further thoughts or information to send to us. And there's all kinds of things in the hacker community that are discussing this, conferences and meetings and things like that. Have we said officially that the Next Hope is happening on July 16th, 17th, and 18th, 2010 at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City? Have we said
that? We have now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's true. What I just said is true. That's when the Next Hope will be. And, you know, I think we're going to have a bunch of panels on this subject and other subjects and maybe some demonstrations as well. Okay, we have this week's song about computers. And this is something really, really cool. I suggest you listen to the lyrics. It's a lot of fun. Devo Spice, all about platform wars. See you in 2 weeks. Good night.
In a couple of dumps because you need to be replaced every couple of months. Macs, on the other hand, last for years
because it takes you that long for you to dry your tears when you realize you spent enough to renovate some rooms and the only software you can run is iTunes. I got software that can do anything from run the space shuttle to help you sing. They help you write when you've been stuck, invest and make a quick buck, millions of titles.
Yeah, and all of them suck. They got a clunky interface and they waste too much space and they crash a damn much. Your table needs a leg brace. You should really try a Mac.
Sorry, but no, I won't. You think I like the iMac and iPod? Well, I don't.
Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC.
Hello, I'm a Mac,
and I'm a PC, and I run all the best games in the industry.
Well, I got games too, dude. What's with the greed? I can run Snoot, that's all I really need.
What about Office? At my job, we've got to.
I can run Office. I can get by with OpenOffice and with Google Docs. They're completely free to me, and also they completely rock. PowerPoint is powerless and pointless like a butter knife. Outlook always leaves me with a crappy outlook on life. Excel only excels at crashing, which is absurd. And all the other apps suck too. Word, I'm doing just fine without any of that crap. In fact, my Mac doesn't have a single Microsoft app.
So what, you want a medal? What do I care? Try getting some songs off of your iPod there. Don't tell me that you never crash, cause I'll call shenanigans. Cause you freeze in place like a room full of mannequins. I've seen you when it happens. You sit there and smile and watch a pretty color spin around for a while.
Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC.
Hello.
I'm a PC.
And I'm a Linux box.
Well, obviously. The fact that you're a toaster kind of gave it away.
So how's life as an appliance treating you today?
You can mock me, but you'll never stop me. I got game. Only toaster on the planet that can claim to run main.
What?
Compiling my operating system to breeze.
Yep.
And I can burn toast as easily as DVDs.
You compile your own OS?
Dude, are you nuts?
You trust Microsoft to do it, and you're calling me the yacht?
You wouldn't catch me doing that unless you gave me a lobotomy.
So we agree on something. Now go away, you bother me.
Hello, I'm a PC.
I'm a PC.
How many PCs we got around here anyway?
Yo.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by balls. Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC, and I'm more affordable than you will ever be.
Well, you get what you pay for.
Oh, don't start. You paid for a computer and got a piece of modern art.
Well, you're about the ugliest thing I've ever seen, and not the blue screen of death burned into your screen.
You're overpriced, underpowered, and slower than soccer, with more kernel panics than Orville Redenbacher. Achoo!
Well, what if we hear? Better renew your antivirus software another year. I bet that you're regretting all those links you clicked. A marriage counselor couldn't resolve that conflict.
Well, I can download porn.
Yes, so can I. The only difference is that I don't get a virus when I try.
You got a stupid mouse.
You got window panes.
You have to bow to Apple's will.
Where the error reigns.
Well, you suck.
Well, you suck more.
Your brother wears army boots.
What are you for?
You big meanie.
What, you gonna go home and cry?
You're a stinky poopy head.
I know you are, but what am I?
Even when you're trying to get crazy, I say, don't you know I'm not Joko?
Wow, they play that. We do play rap here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Wow. Some of those lyrics were something, though, but we won't get into that.